יום השם אל משה, בוא אל פרו, come unto פרו, יעני, הכבדתי אס ליבו. Now this is a very crucial phrase, הכבדתי אס ליבו. God says clearly that he has strengthened the heart of Pharaoh, ve'eslev avodo, and also the hearts of his servant, in order, ososai ela bekirbo, set up these signs in his midst. That means the signs meaning really teaching. That, so the idea of ve'eslev ela bekirbo. Now Hirsch said, we're dealing with the eighth, this is Avdus. Now according to Hirsch, the order of the plagues were always teach them that they were gaining, they were strangers, like they tried to make the Jews realize they were strangers, so Pharaoh had to realize he's a stranger. The second was, that was Ditzach, Adash Bachab. If you recall, I think we spoke about this last week, that Rabbi Yehuda divided, according to Hirsch, Rabbi Yehuda divided the Makos into different grouping, and the grouping have a certain meaning. The first mako was datsah, right? Dam, svardeya, kinim, blood, frogs, and kinim, lice. Now, dam came to teach the Egyptians that they were also strangers in the land. They felt that they were very wealthy and important because they had the Nile. So the message of the blood was that the Nile is not always productive. Then they had Svardeya. Svardeya taught them that came under Avdus. Why? Because the Avdus meaning they made the Jews feel that they were slaves. The slave owner has a certain conceit. He's haughty. Now, the idea of the haughty conceit of a slave owner was put down with the Svardeya, the frog. The frog is a timid, remote animal. Normally it slips away from man and goes into the marshes. Here, this frog went into Pharaoh. So it shows that the arrogance and the haughtiness of Pharaoh. Then kinim is lice. Now kinim was simply aggravated situation. Inui, meaning affliction. Now that was the first three. We're now at this point in the Makos in 10:1, we're dealing with the last three. The last three were Borod, were Hail, Arbeh. Arbeh is what we're going to speak about now, locusts, and then Choshech, darkness. Now, when you get to the last three, you have the same message. Borod means Geirus. I'm going to send this Borod, and this Borod is going to be all-encompassing and destroy almost everything. So it's the more definitive punishment to emphasize the aspect that you are strangers because you have what to eat in your backyard. You'll see you're like strangers. Now, it was more destructive and more encompassing than the previous levels because we're getting near the end. The same is true with the Arbeh. The Arbeh is the Avdus part. The Arbeh is the servant to teach you the feeling, what it feels like to be an alien. That's what an Eved, you make him feel. So the idea here is that the Avdus, he says, the third and last plague, seek him in the midst of all his splendor, he says. And the fact was that you're going to send other aliens in his kingdoms who would devour all of his riches. So here we're really dealing with powerful punishments. So it seems that Hashem went ahead and hichbadeti eslibo. In order that Pharaoh shouldn't bend down for these powerful punishments, God went ahead and he gave him strength. He strengthened his heart. Like we said, a liver, the more you cook the liver, the harder you get. That's why it uses the Lashon Kovid, hichbadeti eslibo. Normally, something else, the more meat, the more you cook it, the softer it gets. Here, by Pharaoh's heart, that's the Lashon Kovid, Hichbadeti Eslibo. Now, how did Hashem do this? Well, there's many ways that God could strengthen the heart and the will. But Hirsch learns the Hichbadeti Eslibo, even now, he says, I brought this powerful Borod. So that's enough to sway anybody. How did it come? It came, as we'll see, a fire surrounding the freezing water. Miraculous revelation. Yet, he emphasized with the hail also that he didn't touch the chitim. He brought it in the time where it says in sentence 32, Ve'achito ve'achusemes lo nuku. All right? If you notice verse, sentence, chapter 9, verse 31 and 32. We mentioned it last week in a different vein. But here it says, what does it say in 30, 31, and 32? It says, you, Moshe, told him that you and your servants, although you're going to get this terrible thing, I'm going to spread my hands out to heaven, and the board will stop when I supplicate, when I plead with God. So you would think that you learned the lesson. But I'm telling you that you and your servants did not learn the lesson yet. You still don't have fear for God. Why? Because even if the flax, this is the way Hirsch learns it, because even if the flax and the barley are smitten, because the barley was already ripe and the flax was in its stalk, so it was all destroyed. So it's a tremendous, tremendous makkah in Mitzrayim, a tremendous plague, yet the wheat was still there. So therefore, it's something which can mislead Pharaoh, that instead of Pharaoh going ahead and definitely succumbing to the strong makkah, but Hashem made it in such a way that the chita and the kesemes lainu. So the way Hirsch explains 30, 31, and 32, Moshe is predicting to them in sentence 30, I know I'm going to stop these tremendous borot, but you still haven't learned your lesson. Why? Because the pishta and the sa'era, true, were destroyed, but you're going to go out in the field and you'll see, but the chitim wasn't destroyed, so you still have what to eat, and it wasn't so totally encompassing, so therefore you're not going to give in. So he predicted that. So that's what God tells him here in 10:1. Hashem says to Moshe, come to Pharaoh, and it's true that Pharaoh is not ready to send out the people. Why? Ki ani hichbadati eslibo, because I hardened his heart. How did I do it? In a natural way. By the fact that I didn't make the borot affect the chitin, the wheat. So he still had what to eat. And it turned out that it wasn't total destruction. So therefore that gave him the material, gave him the desire, and it gave him some reason to harden his heart. So that's what's related back to 31 and 32. Why did Hashem harden his heart? In order to bring these various signs, in order to saper beyozne bincha, you should have some material to speak about when it comes to what to the Seder. You should be able to speak beyozne bincha to your sons and your grandsons. Hisasher hishalalti b'mitzrayim. Now the word hishalalti has two interpretations. Some say, we'll bring down later, Rashi and Ramban, that hishalalti means I joked around with the Egyptians. Meaning I did this and I did that. We'll see what the joking was. Hirsch learns the word hisalalti b'mitzrayim, not that I joked with the Egyptians, but I brought a gradual, a progressive type of a message to them. What was the progressive type? For example, a child is called an olel, and an alila is not a nice, olel is a developing continuous series. So he says, his olel b'mitzrayim means to treat the Egyptians in such a way that progressively I will be able, his olel, step by step, I will be able to go ahead and reveal my power unto them. So this idea of the makos, and the way Hirsch learns, each mako, each level of the makos had a more powerful message. So now we're holding near the end. Yet God went ahead, and within the powerful makkah, he went ahead and he gave Pharaoh still a way that, you know, that he shouldn't respond. So God hardened his heart. Why did he do that? Because he, for many reasons. First of all, there'll be a message to everybody, Ososai, showing the greatness. And also this will provide opportunity for you to speak to your children and to teach them. All right, now it says that Moshe and Aaron came in sentence 3 into Pharaoh. And they said to him, so is God of the Hebrews said, until when may anto le'anos miponai? Until when will you refuse to succumb to me? Shalach ami v'yavduni. Let my people go v'yavduni and let them serve me. Now this is the warning that he gave unto him. Now what does it mean, let my people go and let them serve me? He could have said just, let my people go. But what does he say? Admosai me anto la'anos miponai. How long will you hold back, right? And you won't humble yourself. You will refuse to humble yourself for me. All right, now we want to discuss a number of issues here. The basic issue is, how could God harden Pharaoh's heart? The way Hirsch says, it wasn't that he hardened his heart in some way that a god would harden his heart, but Hashem went ahead and he gave him such a makkah within the makkah itself. He saw the pishto was not destroyed, so that gave him material, or it gave him reason to harden his heart. Right, that wouldn't be so difficult if we learn that way. But if we learn literally that really God like hardened his heart because the spirits of the kings and everybody in the hands of God, so God hardened his heart, how could he harden his heart? I mean, if Pharaoh was ready to do tshuva, why did Hashem choose to harden his heart? So the Rambam discusses this in Hilchas Tshuva. So he brings down this idea. And let me just quote to you what he says. So the Rambam says the following. He says, there is a possibility that a person will sin a great sin. That means if a person will say a sin tremendously, or many sins, until the justice demands before the Supreme Dayan, before the Supreme Judge, that he has to be punished. In that case, he says, we take away from him the opportunity to do tshuva. Hashem takes away the opportunity to do tshuva, and they don't permit him to do tshuva before he dies. Now, and when he dies without tshuva, so the person will, you know, succumb to his sin. So I mean, so obviously his soul will be destroyed because he didn't do tshuva. So he says, that's why the Torah writes here that Vani achazek eslev paro, I will harden Pharaoh's heart, God had told Moshe originally, because Pharaoh sinned on his own volition before, his own choice. And he sinned so strongly that the justice demanded that the tshuva should be removed from him until he would receive punishment. Therefore, he says, HaKodesh Baruch Hu had hardened his heart. So now he says, if that's the case, fine. So we can understand that God, tshuva is really a gift of Hashem, as the Chazal tell us. This gift, this ability to do tshuva, God can find that he removes this ability. But then, why does he send Moshe constantly to Pharaoh? I mean, if he took away the opportunity to do tshuva, why is he playing? Is he playing games? So he says, "V'loma hoshaleach lo b'yad Moshe." So why did he constantly send a message to Moshe and say to him, "Send the people away and do tshuva"? Why did he do that? So he says, "Kedei lahodia." He did that all the people should know that since HaKadosh Baruch Hu takes away tshuva from a person, he takes away, by hardening his heart, the opportunity to do tshuva, the person cannot do tshuva. That means, you'd say, but he's still a person, so what if God won't let me do tshuva? I'm going to do tshuva. Seems not. That soul of a person so much in the hands of God, that if God takes away the opportunity to do tshuva, although he has free will to do tshuva, and he may have compelling reasons to do tshuva, it's like a puppet, he can't do tshuva. How do we know this? We know this from the pasuk, the Rambam says, from Moshe coming to tell him. Why did Moshe come? He came to teach us this, that although he's warning Pharaoh and he's getting all the makis and everything else, yet I took away the opportunity to do tshuva and never do tshuva. So according to that Rambam, how would we interpret this passage? It's like this. Ani echbarati eslibo v'esleva v'adot. I have gone ahead and strengthened his heart. Why? Laman shisi ososai ela bekirbo. So the Beis HaLevi says, in order to show that if I don't want a person to do tshuva, there is no way that he's going to do tshuva. So what is the lesson? The lesson is, like the Rambam, that if God, all of these makos were that if he wants you to do tshuva, you'll do tshuva. You'll have the opportunity. But he can also deprive from you the opportunity to do tshuva. And the second lesson is what he continues in the next pasuk. Oman tesaper beyoznei bincha es asher yisalauti b'mitzrayim. In order to tell your children the jokes that I made in Egypt. So it seems there are two different statements. We're not learning. First we said Hirsch before. But now he's saying he's alauti like Rashi, meaning that I played games with the Egyptians. So you're going to have a lesson from here that I took away from them the opportunity to do tshuva. And their games with these Egyptians, it was a joke. He's alauti b'mitzrayim. So now, on this they interpret that according to the Rambam, so it seems that all of these things came for that purpose, to tell him that the havodas liboy, why is the person hard? His heart is hardened. Not because he came to Pharaoh and tell Pharaoh the following. Tell him, ki ani hirbadati eslibo. Why, Pharaoh, aren't you reacting? Because God says you really would have reacted 1,000 times. But ani hirbadati eslibo. I made your heart harden. And therefore you didn't react because you're not deserving of doing tshuva. Now how could God do that? So the Borod, it came after the Borod. So it seems it's a special message that Moshe is to tell Pharaoh. Why did he choose this message right now? Why didn't he choose this message a little early? He says, because it's a message that was very relevant to what assumed up to now. What happened just before we discussed? The Borod, the hail, came down. So they looked at hail in a different aspect. They tell us the hail, there was a fire, Betecha Borod. It was, like the Medrash says, it was Pele Betech Pele. It says that God cast down the Borod, came in the form, the hail came in the form of tremendous boulders. And it was a very powerful message. How? Because in the boulder itself of ice, there was a fire. So this was fire and water. So this was a miracle, nes b'teich nes, that fire and water both made a shutvis, in a sense, that they went against their natural tendencies, right, and their natural drive, that fire and water, as we know, are two extremes. One quenches and one puts out the other, extinguishes the other. Yet for the Makkah of Borod, Hashem made it that the fire would not put out. The water would not put out. So this tells Pharaoh, fire would go ahead and melt the ice. But here, it did not melt the ice. Why? Because Hashem didn't want it to melt the ice. So that's what he says, Bikir Bo. All of these signs that I made up to now, they should have been like fire, melting the heart, your heart. But no, I didn't want it to melt your heart. And therefore, I hardened your heart so the water would not melt your heart. Why did I harden your heart? Because I removed from you the idea of tshuva. So this is the way Rabbi Yezer Salant learns this. And it's a new idea. And it's good in the sense it's new because he's telling Pharaoh, Ki ani hirbadati eslibo. He's not telling Moshe, go to Pharaoh because I hardened Pharaoh's heart. But go to Pharaoh and tell Pharaoh, Bo el Paro, and tell him, Ki ani hirbadati eslibo. The reason he hasn't succumbed to all of these things is because that's mine, in order that they shouldn't make that impact upon him, which is a whole new way of interpreting verse 1. And the second aspect is, Man shisi aseisai ele bikir bo. In order that you should tell your children the jokes. Now, Rashi and Rambam both interpret the word hisalauti. Hisalauti means, not like Hirsch built up my message, but according to him, hisalauti means that I played games. What were the games that he played with Pharaoh? So they point out, for example, we just had Bailiabe here. So he says like this, up to now, Hashem, where is he going to make his salauti? It seems up to now he didn't make that many games, but now with Arbe, he's to play games with Pharaoh. Why? Because what happened by Arbe? Shortly thereafter, it says that I am going to strengthen his heart. All the other makas, when Moshe would come into Pharaoh, so Pharaoh would always conduct himself in a dignified manner, in a diplomatic manner. He didn't scream at him, he didn't send him out, he didn't threaten him, up to now. Right? But over here, when it came to the Arbe, there, so what does it say? When it came to the Arbe, so after Moshe tells him the Chisa Sein Ho'or, it's like in sentence 5, it tells him how strong the Arbe will be. that it will cover over the face of the earth. And you won't be able to see the earth. And it will eat Yeser HaPleito HaNisheres Lachem. And it will eat up totally a vestige of that remain. So there's just, as an aside, an interesting interpretation that they say that he won't be able to see the earth. What is the significance of that? Because normally, when a person is eating something, right, the Kli Yakar says that normally when a person eats something, so the seeing the food also gives him satisfaction. In fact, the Gemara says in Chum that a blind person is never completely satisfied when he eats. Why? Because he lacks the ability to see the food that he eats. Therefore, he doesn't get total satisfaction. So he says, the verse tells us here that the locusts will be so numerous that they will cover over the face of the earth. And therefore, they're going to be eating and they won't see because they're covered with locusts. They're going to be eating, but all they'll see will be locusts. They'll never see the food that they're eating. So they'll never really be get satisfied. And since they won't get satisfied, they'll eat everything that the hail left over, and they won't, because they couldn't eat enough, because echisa seina oritz, because they covered over the face of the earth. But anyway, getting back to this, normally it means echisa seina oritz, meaning that eina oritz, like Kurt says, your eye sees the land, but they will be so totally covering the land that your eye will not be able to see the land. So it's a pretty scary thing, and they won't have anything left to eat. And not only is that, it's going to come into your houses, and they're going to be every place. So what happened there? That Paro went ahead, became very angry, by Goresh Osom, Achare Me'ez Pnei Paro. In sentence 11, when Moshe asked, when in sentence 9, Moshe says to Pharaoh, Binorenu ubiskenenu melech. Now, Pharaoh was already willing to give in sentence 8. He was willing to give in if he'll tell him who will go along. So Moshe said, no, binoreinu ubiskenenu nelech. When we go, we will go with our young and with our old. Pharaoh was ready to let the gvorim go, let the older people go. Like his advisors told him in sentence 7, shlach es anoshim ve'yavdu. The ones that are going to go, the adults, let them go. So Pharaoh was already ready to give in to that. And then he called back to Moshe, he said, Mi umi ahokin? How many do you want to go? So Moshe said in sentence 9, Bino Reis, he became very angry, and Vayigoresh Eisom Me'ez Pnei Paro. Vayigoresh Eisom Me'ez Pnei Paro. And he drove them away. Now this was the first time that Pharaoh drove away Moshe and Aaron. He lost his cool. And he went ahead, and he became extremely angry at them. So now, was there a purpose for this? Why was this? Why did Hashem make it that at this time he should become so angry that he should throw them away? Why did he have to do that? He said, because this makkah began with the extra dimension. The extra dimension of Isalalti b'Mitzrayim, of joking and making shpaz, as if they were children. What does this mean? Because what happened afterwards? When Pharaoh needed Moshe Ba'aron, so he had to go back, and he just warned them not to see him. He drove them away. He had to come and call them. So the fact that first he drives them away, and then he has to call them. And not only did he have to call them, later after the Makkah of Choshech, it even went even further. And in Makkah's Bechoris, what happened by Makkah's Bechoris? Paro, the great king, had to run around looking for Moshe in the middle of the night, right? He got up in the middle of the night, and he went knocking on all the doors and screaming, where is Moshe? Where is Aaron? Come, go, worship your God. Not like I said that I won't send you away, and not like I said only these people could go, but go with everybody. Just go, all right? So they said, Kasher dibartem, and not only that, you said that we should give you sacrifices to take along. We'll give you sacrifices. The only thing is, I want you to pray that I shouldn't die because I'm a poor. So this is the biggest hisayos, right? Hashem made this idea of Pharaoh driving them away and saying, I'm angry, I'm not going to give you anything, only the men should go. And then the same Pharaoh has to come back later and he says, not only the men, take the children, not only the children, please, just pray. So the surrounding scenario, not just the refusal for the Arvid, but the additional ideas that were composed here, was the purpose of God taunting and joking with the powerful Egyptians. So that's what he tells in the beginning. Bo es paro, ki ani hitbadati es libo. Why did I do it now with the Arvid? Because lamanta saper, the reason I'm doing it now is in order you will have additional things to talk about at the Seder. Es asher yisalalti v'mitzrayim. In addition to the makas, you'll be able to speak about the joking and the ridicule that I poured upon the Egyptians. So this was, for example, some also point out the schok. Also the Arvid, it happened before, there was also a schok. What was this? Because we know that with the Arvid, what is the Arvid? The locust. So a lot of people were killed, right? And terrible things happened, but they also had something good out of it. What did they have good out of it? From these locusts, they went ahead and they salted them away after they died, and they had food, and they cooked them for a long time. So you could just picture how everybody went grabbing, right, food, like in Panama, right? You know, or any disaster. Whenever there's a natural disaster, so right away the looting stops. That instead of the locusts being looted, the locusts are doing the looting. The Arvid is looting. But in this sense, the locusts were laying dead and everybody was grabbing locusts and sawing them away. So now, but this was also a bad result. Why? Because what does it say later? All the Arvid, when God took away the Arvid, what happened? It says they all disappeared. So here they had in the freezer, they had a bunch of salted arbis. And then when the time came to remove it, it just got wings and flew away. So, I mean, this was really something. He thought they would have a good banquet. Sudden, their pantries are emptied out. He saw lalti. This is a big joke. So that's what Hashem is saying. From now on, he says, I'm having a hisalalti. It's not just a sosai, but I'm going to add insult to injury in the sense that I'm going to play games with them. So this is really what happened in the Arvid. But now let's get back. He also adds the idea of me'anta lefonai, that you refuse to, why did he say in sentence 3, we pointed out, admosai me'anta le'ones mifonai, you refuse to humble yourself before me. It seems that he has another problem. Shalach amivi avduni, send them away. There are two things here. He wanted him to send them away. True. But he seems to also punish him, not only for sending him away, but for not humbling himself before God. So it's an additional punishment. Pharaoh could have remained arrogant, it seems, and send them away. But fine, what could he do? But he doesn't have to recognize and humble himself before God. Yet it seems here that he's punishing him for not humbling himself before God. So in that, the Brisker Rav once said, and he brought down the Rambam. The Rambam says the following. It says, when God brings a punishment upon the Jews and they have a tainis, so they're supposed to, the main purpose for the tainis is that they should get together and to pray and call out to Hashem. So the Rambam says, however, if they won't cry, and they won't call out to Hashem, but they'll say, look, whatever tragedy happened is memine go'elo. As they feel the world, that's just what life is. And this was just a perchance happening. It wasn't really the hand of God bringing this about, but it was a perchance happening. So he says, this is a ruthless, cruel thing, and this causes them to have more tzoras, because they'll continue doing their evil deeds that they've done up to now. They haven't learned the lesson because they attribute this to happenings. And therefore, it'll bring about, since they didn't learn the lesson, so you'll get even more punishment. And he says, the Rambam says, that's why it says in the Tofefet, if you go with me, Bikeri, I will go with you, Bikeri. What does that mean, Bikeri? Bikeri is mikra, a happening. Meaning all the tragedies that I will bring about, start saying, oh, it's just a happening, and you won't get the message, so I'll continue to punish you more. So he says, that's what it means here. When he said, Pharaoh, you're going to get makas for two reasons. First of all, you're going to get makas because shalakas ami, because you don't send the people over. But secondly, you're going to get makas because you don't realize that the purpose of these makas were punishing you. So that's the meaning of this phrase. Ad mosai me'anto le'anois miponoi. One of the reasons why punished is because me'anto le'anois miponoi, because you refuse to humble yourself before me. With all the punishments that I have given you up to now, you have still refused to recognize that indeed I am your superior and I am the one who is able to punish you and to do with you whatever I wish to do. All right, that's basically some of the lessons. So you see that when it came to Harbet, not only, as Hirsch says, was it a more powerful punishment, but according to the other points, the Rambam notes that we pointed out, that Hashem went ahead and Ichbadati Eslibo, he hardened his heart, and he wanted Pharaoh to know that he hardened his heart. And the Rambam said, Tano, he hardened his heart, that he shouldn't do tshuva because he doesn't have the opportunity to do tshuva. And this is a lesson that we have to learn. Plus the other ideas of Isalalti, the fact is that you caused him difficulty and so on. Alright, now these are just a few points here. Now continuing, Vayemra Hashem al Moshe, God said to Moshe in Mitzrayim, HaChodesh Hazeh Lochem Rosh Kedoshim, that this is the month, this month is Rosh Kedoshim, is really the head of all the months. Rishen Hu Lochem Lechodesh Hashana, this is the first. Now we know that the Jewish people, we count really from the month of the moon rather than of the sun. We go with the moon rather than with the sun. Now, that's what we have, Rosh Chodesh. Now, it's interesting, they bring down the Tzitzis Bracha, when we bench Rosh Chodesh, so we always say the Yehi Ratzon, we say Yehi Ratzon, and we also say Misha Asa Nisim Lavaseinu, that means the one who performed miracles for our fathers and he redeemed them from enslavement to redemption should also bring about the geula. So somehow we connect the geula, the redemption that is about to come, we connect that to the Birkat Chodesh, to the blessing of the new moon. So the Tosfos Bracha says, because really Kiddush HaChodesh was the first mitzvah that the Jewish people were called upon to perform. HaChodesh Hazeh Lachem, they were told this, that they have to proclaim this mitzvah. So it means because this was the first mitzvah and this brought about the Avdus Lecheirus, this was an important part, ingredient of their exodus, of the exodus of being liberated. So now when we go ahead and bench Rosh Chodesh and we in a sense commemorate the Kiddush HaChodesh, so we also add to Hashem the supplication, the prayer, that it should be a time when the redemption should come about. That's the idea of HaChodesh Hazeh Lochem Reish Kedoshim. Now there's another interesting message on HaChodesh Hazeh Lochem Reish Kedoshim. The Sephorna says, up to now, this Chodesh, it's like saying, Lochem, now the months are given over to you to do that which you desire. That means you can go ahead and you have control over time, in a sense. And you're not given into the hands of time, but time is given into your hands. And that's why we say by the holidays, that Asher Tikro'u Osam Mikro'i Kedesh Atem. It says Asher Tikro'u, the pasuk we say, Asher Tikro'u Osam, Moadei Hashem Asher Tikro'u Osam. These are the festivals that you should pronounce. So the word Osam they interpret as Atem, that you have the power of pronouncing the times when the festivals will occur. And even if you make a mistake, so far, even if you make a mistake and you pronounce the festival to be the wrong time, it still becomes the festival. And we'll talk a little bit more on that, the power of Klal Yisrael. But just one thing, from here we see that what is Iker, the main lesson of Yetzias Mitzrayim? What was the main lesson? That we became free people. But what was the freedom that we achieved? that time is given into our hands. The fact is that we can understand the chshivus, the greatness of what? Of time. And the fact, the great avera, the iser gadol, to be mevazvis, to go ahead and just kill time. Because really, time was given into us. Now, what can we do with time? We'll see pretty soon we can do with time. But when you think into it, the greatest gift that's possible, the most gift that money cannot buy is time. In a sense, when you wake up in the morning, if God gives you 24 hours of the day, he's giving you the greatest gift possible. Because if you don't have 24 hours, you can give all the money in the world and you won't get it. Think of it in that sense. So, Achedesh Hazel Lachem, that you have governed over time. But aside from its moral sense, it has a tremendous halachic point. The law is, you know, the story of Rabbi Yeshua and Rabbi Gamliel. Rabbi Gamliel went ahead and he said, this is the day that Rosh Chodesh will be, which would make Yom Kippur on a special day. And then Rabbi Yeshua knew that it wasn't correct. Yet Rabbi Yeshua had to come in the presence of Rabbi Gamliel on what he thought was Yom Kippur. He had to come with his weekday garments, carrying his burden and so on. And Rabbi Gamliel insisted on this. Why? Because it says that the Beis Din, who he was the authority, the Sanhedrin, they have the right to determine what is a holiday, when Rosh Chodesh is and when the Yom Tov is. So was Rabbi Yeshua being Mechalel Yom Kippur? I mean, if really Rabbi Yeshua was right, and Yom Kippur should have been on Monday. So Rabbi Gamliel saying the Sanhedrin said Yom Kippur is on Tuesday. So if he makes Rabbi Yeshua come on Monday, driving a horse, we'll say. So was he Mechalel Yom Kippur, the real Yom Kippur? The answer is he wasn't Mechalel, the real Yom Kippur. The real Yom Kippur is the day that the Sanhedrin said will be the real Yom Kippur. The laws of nature and the laws of time demand that Yom Kippur, we would say, is on that day, right? Is on that day. That doesn't mean that the laws of Yom Kippur are that day. Once the Sanhedrin has the power, they also have the power to go ahead and to change. They have the power to go ahead and to change the time. They have the power of creation. They create new time. Even so much so, for example, we say in the Gemara, when do we count the year from? From Nisan. Nisan is the first month. I Tishri is creation. Tishri Nivro Elam, the world was created in Tishri. So we really should count the months of the year from Tishri, not make Tishri near the middle of the year. And Nisan is the beginning of the year. The world was created in Tishri. So it seems that the Torah, however, gave us the authority to count from Nisan, because it says, Rishon Ulachem Lechodshei Hashana, first day, Rishon Ulachem Lechodshei Hashana. So it seems that the first of the months of the year became Nisan. It was given over into your power. You can go ahead and make it in the first of the months of the year. If you take a vote and say this is the first of the month of the year, it so becomes the first of the month of the year. Iris Tishri doesn't mean anything. Because God said, Hashem said, that the Sanhedrin has the power. So they changed the Yom Kippur. And this is a concept which we find throughout. If they say that left is right, left becomes right. It says by Shlomo HaMelech, we mentioned this Medrash, that he wanted to marry many wives. And according to his nature, they wouldn't have had a bad effect upon him. Torah is made that they wouldn't have a bad effect upon him. But the Torah said no. So Shlomo HaMelech felt that. So the Torah said, no, he'll do it, he'll transgress it, but it won't have a bad effect upon him. So what does it say? It said that when he became old, the wives were able to cause him and had a bad influence upon him, these many strange wives. But he knew that his nature, that they won't have a bad effect upon him. The answer is, nature that he wouldn't have a bad effect upon him was the nature of creation. But once the Torah was given, the Torah supersedes and overshadows creation and changes the actual creation itself. And we find even in halacha, we say when a child is 13 years old, he gets a certain maturity. I assume that's the reason why we make all these big parties. But the idea is, what happens if they went ahead and they made a leap year? All right? So we say they don't become 13 until the next month. Now, there are many laws. Say one person made a marriage ceremony and he had two witnesses. And the idea is that these two witnesses saw this.
right?
And when they're 13, we say they have the wisdom of being able to testify because they have wisdom. It has to do with wisdom. So now we say that the wedding is no wedding and they don't need a divorce or anything because you were lacking the wisdom of witnesses. But what's the difference? Just because it happened to be a leap year in the calendar, did that affect their maturity and that they can't be witnesses because they're going to be by mitzvah next month? No. Terence says, yes, it did affect. It seems that the calendar year, the fact that there's an Hebrew year and there's an extra month, so that affects even their maturity. And that's why you find throughout the Talmud, for example, they have arguments between Beisham and Beisilo. So then one will say, Elu ve'elu divrei elakim chayim. These and these are the words of the true God. Now, how could that be? I mean, it's either one or it's either the other. The answer is, one could be from its natural being. That's the way it is. But if the majority of a Sanhedrin or something will get together and say that it's the other way, so Hashem made that nature should be changed according to the other way. So in that sense, both aspects can really be true, because originally at creation it was one way, and after the Sanhedrin said this is it, the actual the physical thing actually changes, and therefore it becomes what? Another way. So in that sense, both of them are honestly true from God. The one of creation was true from God, and then after the one that the halacha was nikva, when God said this constitutes the halacha, and halacha changes the practical way, so that became true from God. So therefore you could have both ideas, avelu ve'elu divrelim chayim. There's just many things. There's one thing also that I wanted to mention, a very good word that always bothers us at the Seder. It says, that the Eni Yedei Elisho, the son that doesn't have any power, you know, he doesn't know how to ask. So it says there, from the Magid's Mashal, it says, Behoyu Kiyemru Aleichem B'neichem, in chapter 12, verse 26. So it says there that when your children will say, Mo Avoda Azos Lachem, what is this service unto you? So we know that the Rishalmi says, this is what the evil son says. Mo ha'aveda hazeis lochem. Means, what trouble are you troubling us? So it says, you should tell him, ba'avur zeh osa Hashem li b'tzeisim mitzrayim. This is what Hashem did for me. Li v'lolo, for me and not for him. Ilu ho'yashom, if he would have been there, le'oya nigo, he would not have been what? He would not have been redeemed. So really, the question is, what are you saying, Ilu Hoyoshon? Why is it saying like you're talking, you should tell him, if you would be there, Ilu Hoyoshon Lehoyonigo. Ilu Hoyoshon seems you're speaking third person. I'm speaking to you and I'm saying, if he would have been there, Lehoyonigo. Why does that mean, Lehoyonigo? It should say, Ilu Hoyoshon Lehoyonigo. You're talking to him. So the Dumna Magid says, no, you're really not talking. He gives you a marshal. He says that they once called up in a small village and fire is burning. You know, they had straw houses, but the fire was burning down the house and the firemen came. And the first thing they did was they saturated all the other houses around there with water. So he started screaming, what are you doing? Well, this house is burning. Why are you going ahead and trying to come put out the fire in this house? So the answer is, he says, that house is burning. There's no way you're going to save it. But the main thing is you don't want the fire of that house to go ahead and try other houses. So he says, this Russia, and the Eni Yedei Elisho, you answer the same answer. You say, Bavur Zeh Osa Hashem Li, B'tzei Simi Mitzrayim. You say the same thing for the Eni Yedei Elisho. But you don't answer, if he would have been there, Lehoya Nigol, he wouldn't redeem. So what's the answer? The answer is simple. The Eni Yedei Elisho, the surrounding houses. So you don't bother this Russia. Nothing's going to gain. But you make sure that the surrounding houses don't come redeemed. So therefore, you have to tell them, the Eni Yedei Elisho, you say, Bavur Zeh Osa Hashem Li B'tzeisim Mitzrayim. The reason we're doing this, Oh, this Russia, if he would have been there, he wouldn't have been redeemed. But you're not addressing him, because that's the house, they're already burning, you're really not going to be able to accomplish any. And there's also, if you'll take a look at 13, verse 6 and 7, Shivas Yomim, 7 days, Tochal Matzos, you should eat matzos, right? How is matzos spelled there? Mem, Tzadik, Tov, Uvayom HaShvi, Chag LaShem. 7th day, it's a holiday to God. Matzos Yeocheo, matzos, how's it spelled? Vav is put in. Yeocheo means not you should eat, but should be eat. Matzos Yeocheo should be eaten for 7 days. So the question is asked, why is it repeated twice? 7 days you should eat matzah. Matzah should be eaten 7 days. What does that mean? Secondly, why does it say in the first passage, you should eat? In the second passage, it says, should be. Thirdly, why in the first is it spelled without a vav? In the second, it's spelled with a vav. So the Vilna Gaon answers the following. He says that the minhag the Ramah brings down, and we know that one of the main things of Pesach, you always give money, moyes, it means money to buy wheat, so poor people could bake matzah. And now he's saying the following. How do we know that? Where is it alluded to, that there is such a thing? So it says this pasuk. The first pasuk says the following. Shivas yomim tefal matzah. 7 days, you have to eat matzah. How much matzah does a person have to eat? If he wants to get by with a kezayit, get by with a kezayit. Doesn't have to be a whole box of matzahs. I mean, he could eat other things. He could get by with a minimum matzah. But matzah yeocheo, you also have an obligation to see that matzah should be eaten, meaning that other people have matzah to eat for 7 days. And that should be with the vav in the middle. That should be a full matzah, a little bit of a kezayis. So that's how the Goyim touches up both psukim. Shivas yomim matzah yeocheo. Matzah yeocheo, shivas yomim. There's just the Goyim. I want to tell you, I saw the other day, you know, we always speak in Mochamas, just to show you the greatness of Goyim, how years later, hundreds of years later, you can understand it. We always speak in a Mechamas Gai to Mugger, terrible time before Mashiach. Not that it has to be that way, but if it comes in that way, like we've been learning Shabbos night, if it comes in that way, it's going to come in this way, and Mechamas Gai to Mugger. A third of the world will be destroyed, a third will remain alive, and a third will suffer hunger and die. So the Goyim made a statement once that this whole Mechamas Gai to Mugger, if it occurs in its worst scenario, will take 12 minutes. Everybody, hundreds of years, it will take 12 minutes. They all laughed at him. It takes 12 minutes to get your horse ready and to get sword out of your shop. I'm going to take 12 minutes. They didn't know what he's talking about. But we, 200 years later, we know that all it would take, God forbid, a nuclear holocaust would be at the most 12 minutes. I'll wait to unleash that bomb, push a button. So you see what the girl also has brought down, that his mother came to him in the Cholam. He told him, you should know when you come to the Beis Din HaElyon, you'll have to answer for every moment and every act of your life. You see the godliness of it.